based on the pamphlet for information about local organizations. We highlighted United Way, Freedom for Immigrants. We hired highlighted Informed Immigrant, and we wanted people to know that there were organizations. But on our pamphlet, we were really happy to be able to add something from Fred Rogers, who's helped so many American children over the years over TV, because one of the things that he says over and over again is, when you're in trouble, find a helper. And we want to encourage people to reach out. One thing we know is that trauma tends to silence people, and it tends to not be spoken of. And so we just wanted the pamphlet to be a catalyst so that things that weren't thought to be spoken of could really be spoken of with people who can help.
Nancy Burke, we want to thank you so much for being with us, psychoanalyst, co-chair of the Psychotherapy Action Network. We will link to the pamphlet you published aimed at helping immigrants' parents separated from their children. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor PDX Pop on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd at Audio Cinema in Portland. PDX Pop celebrates its 15th year with bands like Mr. Wrong, Ritual Veil, Miss Rayon, Nick Normal, Petite, Earl Thomas and the Pain, and many, many more, as well as a street fair, refreshments, and Riggs Kitball. Again, that's PDX Pop on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm, on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Veg Out, Portland Vegan Beer and Food Festival, on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd at Holiday Park in Portland. Veg Out Portland is a celebration of vegan food and drink, which features live entertainment, educational speakers, chef demonstrations, more than 100 vegan vendors, and much, much more. Again, that's Veg Out, Portland Vegan Beer and Food Festival, on Saturday, July 21st and Sunday, July 22nd at Holiday Park, located at Northeast 11th Avenue and Holiday Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm, on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
Instead.
No, this is it.
And good morning, good morning. It's about 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. That is your community radio station, and hopefully it is your very own community radio station. If you are a member, you know you are a part of this station in a very real way. You can become a member right now by going to kboo.fm and hitting the donate button. I'm Ani, and I am here as your host this morning. I'm Positively Revolting. Thanks for tuning in. Teresa Mitchell, host of KBOO's Press Watch every Thursday morning, is joining me in the studio.
Good morning.
On a microphone near her. And she's... It's actually a beautiful scene here as Teresa runs into the studio in the nick of time delivering coffee to me. A wonderful guest, a brilliant partner. Thanks, Teresa, for the coffee delivery. Now there's the removal of the coat and other various noises. And you're on this mic over here. That one. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Teresa. The cue was really, the timing was impeccable. So just to say, it's been about 546 days since the 45th administration of U.S. has taken over the country. In that time, it's become truly apparent that the emperor is naked and that he is, in fact, running amok, ripping the thin veil of democracy away from those previously pacified into thinking that this system, while it may not be perfect, is certainly the best we've got, and it's a fairly good one. And if only we elect the right leaders to make the right choices, the system can be slowly improved upon over the years until we have achieved some sort of perfection. It's true. Many people in this country have not been lulled into that, but for those that were falsely lulled into that thinking, I'm thinking the last 546 days has been a rather rude awakening, and we have seen this popping off. Not in my country. This can't happen in the U.S. This is not what the U.S. is about. Why the U.S.? We're not about separating children from families. We've never, that's not... And yet, again, if you have been in one of the marginalized communities, this is not news, right? The fact that this system is built on oppression, the fact that this country has been founded on genocide, on forced labor, on slave labor, on the absolute repression and oppression of communities of color, of the poor and the houseless, the criminalization of the houseless, the marginalization and criminalization of the LGBTQI+ communities, all immigrant experiences, depending on your country of origin, somewhat different, but immigrants as a whole targeted over decades, over centuries. So to name a few, these communities have never really been included in the illusion of the American dream, and we've all known the brutality of the system and how the idea of freedom, equality, and liberty for all is just not a mantra meant for us. But now more and more people are awakening to the fact that the system isn't just a little bit broken, it's actually wretched and rotten to its core. And so the corruption and cruelty that is the American nightmare is actually being starkly laid before us right now through the antics of this cruel administration. Again, 546 days of this. And every day brings us news that's just a little bit more shocking than the news that's come before. So I find a lot of people are falling into numbness. It's very tempting to find escape and to turn away from the debacle by any method that is effective for you, because being overwhelmed and being traumatized in this constant state of, oh no, they couldn't have done that it's exhausting, right? And yet escapism isn't going to get us there. It's not going to help us. Other people are finding that maybe they just need to lash out at the first authority figure like Target, or at each other, which is far more common. That's also not going to be helpful. So how do we come together as communities, as members of communities, dealing with the constant onslaught of horrifying news? How do we stay active and engaged? These are my questions to you. So this is a very much an audience participation show. I'm going to throw the number out there. It's 503-231-8187. And I want for you to join Teresa and I in this conversation this morning. It's a very important conversation about what we want to actually bring into this world. We talk about, you know, the praxis of positively revolting is decrying the old world as it passes away while co-creating the new world together. That's what the show is built upon. And I tell you, there is no time like the present. The old world is passing away. It's thrashing around a lot right now, right? And this administration is all about just holding it together so it works for them, right? The ultra rich, the ultra powerful. And really, the hell with the rest of us, the hell with the planet, the hell with any other thing that does not play into this administration's sort of triumphant oligarchical display of fanaticism. What can we do here on the ground to actually identify our community needs and start taking care of our communities? What do we want to envision in the new world that we co-create together? And how can we start building that right now? Because I think it's really ineffective, dangerous, naive to believe that this government, the government of this system, is going to actually be helpful. I mean, we can like talk about, no, we really want better education programs. We really want opportunities to continue our education. We really want healthcare for everyone right now. We really want that. And hey, government, go ahead and give that to us. I do think it is the right role of the government to provide for its people. You know, if we're going to have governments, let's have them provide for the people. But I think it's naive to think that continuously asking for those things are going to bring them to us. I think it's time that we build systems that actually help to stem the gap, that actually can fill community needs. And certainly groups in this country have done this before, and it's really high time we do this again. So the number to call, 503-231-8187. Here to the studio. You can also comment on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook, Positively Revolting. You can also engage us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. So that's one of my questions this morning, is how to stay engaged, what inspires you to stay engaged for the long haul, and what are you personally seeing as a big need that you can help to fill, that you can help to organize around, that are that will benefit our communities immediately. That's sort of the starting point for me this morning. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Well, what you're saying reminds me of a number of things. One of them is an article in The Atlantic last month that pointed out that 9% of us are living the dream. And that's 9% going up economically right up into the higher echelons of the fraction of the 1% that has the billions and the millions. But 9% is a substantial political block. And so for 9% of the population, and I'm talking about people who are pulling on upwards of 100,000, more commonly 140,000, just get a couple percentage points in there, and people are pulling in, you know, 250,000 a year and more in their families. And they're used to that, and they're also used to the mythology that they have it because of meritocracy, and they just kind of flinch and look the other way when you point out that there are many other people who, for example, jumped through all the hoops, got the straight A's, and just didn't happen to have the flavor of the month with their engineering degree, who are in the 91% and maybe even homeless. And when you've got that 9% all living together in the burbs, they tend to militate against sharing any of their wealth, as they see it as their wealth, which they believe that they've gotten through meritocracy because they're just so good and they're, you know, so educated. With the 91%, they don't calculate it quite that way. But they vote Republican, frankly, and they vote against anything that would result in redistribution of this maldistributed wealth. And it is grossly maldistributed because, of course, if 9% are doing well, then what I'm saying is 91% of us aren't. That's
well,
pretty shocking.
That.
And when it comes to revolutionary sparks, I should think that 91% of the population that, you know, really kind of has to worry about that next paycheck, and 50% of the population that really, really has to worry about the paycheck. And then the fact that we've got our own, you know, grandmas living on sidewalks tells you that capitalism has failed. Capitalism has failed and has put so many of us in misery, in doubt, in danger. It has polluted the whole planet to the point that the ecosystems are collapsing. But we've got that 9%, you know, and that's politically, that's what the Democratic and Republican parties try to motivate, because they know that they will reliably go to the polls. But I think that we need to, the rest of us, and that includes me in that lower 91%, well down there, I assure you, need to realize that we have been impoverished because of political decisions. It really isn't because you skipped that math class back in 73. It's because this society does not want to share with its citizens. And if you look by contrast, if you look at countries that have embraced some socialism starting in the late 20th century, you can see that there's a commitment to a stable society, a commitment to a better place and a better way of living, a commitment to life. In Denmark, Finland, Norway, France, in countries that don't have, in the aggregate, more wealth than the United States, but which are much better places to live, have much better outcomes, have much lower poverty, because the decision was made, frankly, to distribute the wealth more equitably, not perfectly equitably. Those are capitalist countries. But because of this, I was really pleased when I saw a post on Facebook by Arun Gupta. Hello, Arun. It was about Jeff Bezos, the owner, the person who gets to aggregate all the wealth out of Amazon, who has hundreds of billions of dollars and doesn't know what to do with it because he's just Jeff Bezos. He's not some genius. He's not a Superman. So he's decided he's going to spend at least $1 billion a year making spacecraft to Mars, even though someone's already doing that and way ahead of him. And
well, another, you know, obscene billionaire. I'm just going to, again, put it out there.
Yeah, and the dystopia that his wealth creates. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of that wealth from all those people getting sucked up into his bank account creates the misery and the poverty that you see all around the Seattle area and in every Amazon warehouse where that wealth is literally generated by sucking, well, okay, not literally sucking the blood, but sucking the life out of people who work so hard that they're only expected to be able to keep it up for six weeks or 6 months before they're worn out and replaced by some other desperado who wants a job in an Amazon warehouse.
Yeah, and so there's a couple of things here. First of all, why would anyone, why should anyone be that wealthy? And I know it's not really so popular to talk about limiting wealth, and yet we need to, right? Because that's obscene. And if the planet does not exactly have infinite resources, we know this. And so for someone to acquire that much wealth means others are not having, right? The haves are only there by the existence of the have-nots. And so, you know, poor little fella, bored with his wealth, trying to figure out what to do, wants to build rockets because that'll help. You know, again, why not have a maximum cap? Why not actually put that wealth back into human needs, meeting human needs in the here and now, not looking for how we're going to colonize and exploit space, which, let's face facts, is really about the rocketeering of Elon Musk and Bezos. I don't think they're doing it for their gee whiz science thrills, although there's probably a little part of that. But gee whiz science thrills is not actually a rationale to put so many resources into that direction for private gain when we have people sleeping on the streets, when we have no health care rights, when we have inadequate nutrition, when we have, etc. at, you know, the schools. The schools are in some serious need.
Yeah, and to the 91%, you ain't getting in that space hotel.
Right. And really, I'm not even sure it's about a space hotel so much as it's about resource extraction. You know, Earth first, we'll colonize the rest of the planets later. That's on my mind, too. Again, I'm going to put that number out there and encourage you to join in this conversation. That number is 503-231-8187. You can also get me on our Facebook page. That's Positively Revolting on Facebook. You can also find us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. I'm Ani, and I am excited to have Teresa in the studio with me this morning. Teresa is the host of Press Watch every Thursday morning here on KBOO. And she also, just in the interest of full disclosure, is my beloved spousal unit.
Ah, baby.
Hey, honey. And so, you know, we have fascinating conversations over dinner, and we thought we'd just sort of reproduce them this morning as we are looking at what it really takes to build a better world. What part do you see yourself playing in it? Also, how can you stay engaged and stay inspired at a time when there is so much devastation going on around us? It's a very intense time as we are hit with stories of actual horror. I mean, you know, of course, we are still not having resolved the fact that this government has separated over 2,000 kids from their parents in six weeks, a little more than 6 weeks. That is horrifying. That it seems as though there's some amount of deliberateness in destroying records so that you can't actually find the families to reunite them later on. What is that about?
Oh, I got something to say about that, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, I figured that you did, hence I asked you to come in this morning, because you have a lot to say about these things. You're really smart.
Why, thanks. Well, you remember when, shall I get started?
Yeah, go okay. Right ahead. Yeah, launch right into that one.
Your thoughts
there,
were going with that, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you remember when people were just puzzled at Guantanamo under the Bush administration, and they put those people in sensory deprivation, something that's coming back in the news again. And they're torturing people at black sites around the world.
Yes.
And it came out that it had been known with the military, with the psychological community, that torture doesn't work.
Yes.
But they tortured people to death sometimes.
Yes.
Tortured people senseless. Tortured people to madness. Why did they keep doing that? And people ask, it's like, you know, have they just... gone out of their minds with cruelty? Well, the people who were doing it, who were actually there doing the torturing, were selected among the most sadistic people you can bet, or they will become sadistic or truly twisted from doing it. But that wasn't the point. It was a policy level decision. It goes right up to Dick Cheney, and it worked very, very well for its intention, which had nothing to do with the people eliciting and generating the screams. It was to frighten you. It was to say that there is no limit to what the government will do to you if you disobey to
right.
that extent. And that worked very well. I noticed the chill that had on dissent. And this is the same aim of the separation of families. The anguish that is being produced is horrible. I was so foolish. I listened to another audio tape. I think it came out of NPR. Yesterday, of a three-year-old who had been very cruelly separated from her grandma, and them talking over the phone, which is the only thing they're allowed to do, you know, and the poor baby crying to be brought back into the arms of her grandma. That's aimed at you. That is to terrify you. That's torturing you. they know it's not going to stop people from desperately trying to get in to the country when they have no other choice. No, it's aimed at making sure that you don't disobey, that you are frightened, that you flinch. To some extent, they're trying to frighten people coming, and I'm sure it does have a temporary effect. People say, well, you can't go over the border in that manner. They'll separate your kids. But people are coming here because they can't live where they're at, because they are being, you know, shot at and tortured and decapitated by gangs that supply drugs to U.S. citizens, notably to U.S. military bases, for example, the one in Tegucigalpa, Honduras. And so that isn't going to stop. But that policy is, that's the Trumpites. I mean, as they like to say, they're triggering the snowflakes. They're torturing you.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to be said about the naked cruelty of this administration and the impetus that provides, the encouragement that provides for people to stay in line, citizen, right? That is, I think, very accurate. And I think there's also a lot to be said for the trial balloons of fascism. That basically when fascism has, or any authoritarian dictatorial system has erupted, it comes in a way that is pretty kind of predictable, right? That in most situations, it comes a little slowly. That there's just this incident that happens that doesn't seem to really fit the rest of it starts getting a little out of line with where the country has been. And then maybe a little bit more out of line. And each time there's a little test to see how the populace reacts. And I think that it's really important to sort of check right now what's happening with immigrants. I think it's super important. And know that I'm fully aware that, yes, Obama deported a heck of a lot of immigrants prior to 2015 when he had some sort of political epiphany. Yes, that's true. Yes, these problems have gone on longer than 546 days. This country was founded on genocide. These are not new problems. But the acceleration of this last year and a half cannot be denied nor ignored. And so right now, if you check what's happening with immigrants, if you check what's happening with the family separations at the border and the horror and devastation that is seeding, and then we look at the fact that people now with green cards and permanent residency status are also being scrutinized and in some cases deported. That's right, green card holders, because there may have been a misdemeanor 10 years ago. Time to go out of the country. Even if you have served a tour of duty in the armed forces since your misdemeanor, there are still cases of deportation right now that are happening. And then we are seeing articles about how if you've become a naturalized citizen, that ain't going to protect you either, right? That you can lose that citizenship and you can still be deported if there's some cause, if you've committed some crime. And some of these crimes are pretty, you know, minor.
So make a chart or a Venn diagram of everyone who's targeted and everyone who's not targeted, and the intent of the policy becomes very clear: to rule from the minority, to rule from whiteness, and to degrade the safety, the legitimacy, the status of everyone else.
Right.
Because they are the minority. White straight males are the minority. Now, don't hear me say white straight males and think I'm down on people for being white straight and male. I'm just identifying the demographic that has been targeted for this sort of fascism. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all right. There is an article that has been put around. Fintan O'Toole wrote for the Irish Times that it's an interesting article, and I think it actually is well worth a read. And I'm just going to do the first couple of paragraphs here. To grasp what is going on right now, we need to reflect on two things. One is that we are in a phase of trial runs. The other is that what is being trialed is fascism, a word that should be used carefully and not shirked when it's so clearly on the horizon. Forget post-fascist. What we are living now is pre-fascism. It's easy to dismiss Trump as an ignoramus, not least because he is. But he has an acute understanding of one thing, and that is test marketing. He created himself in the gossip pages of New York tabloids, where celebrity is manufactured by planting outrageous stories that you can later confirm or deny, depending on how they go down. And he recreated himself in reality TV, where the storylines can be adjusted according to the ratings. Put something out there, pull it back, adjust, and go again. Fascism doesn't arise suddenly in an existing democracy. It is not easy to get people to give up their ideas of freedom and civility. You have to do that in trial runs. If they're done well, a trial run serves two purposes. They get people used to something that they may initially recoil from, and they allow you to refine and calibrate. That's what is happening right now, and we would be fools not to see it. I completely agree with Fintan O'Toole in those statements, and we've had those discussions on this program in the past. I want to hear from you. What do you think about this, and what are you doing about it? 503-231-8187. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And good morning, Squirrel. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm just perplexed as to why people have to buy things on their computer and have things delivered the next day, and make this guy, whatever his name is, up in Seattle richer and richer, as opposed to going down to your local store and buying your books from your local bookstore instead of having things delivered, you know, immediate gratification. I mean, I'm older. I don't buy things on my computer except for like maybe an airline ticket. But it's like, buy your stuff local. And why would you want to make this guy richer and richer when your people down the street have a family to feed and the money that you spend locally stays in your community?
I think that there's about three answers to that. One is, I agree with you, pretty much. But there's a couple of nuances. And why this is sort of working into more of a phenomenon, I think. One is the time pressure that many people are under. That if you have a more or less full-time job and no kids, then this is probably still going to work for you to go to your local store, to think about things, plan out your week, and get your shopping done locally and all that kind of good stuff. If, on the other hand, like so many people are being economically crushed, that I've talked to a couple people this week that tell me that they are working one full-time job and one three-quarter time job, or two full-time jobs, working 80 hours a week, especially if you happen to have kids that you're trying to support, does not allow you the luxury of going to your corner store and developing relationships with the business owners in your neighborhood. You are exhausted. You are running from one job to the other, trying to grab some sleep and trying to actually remember what your kids look like in the process.
Sure.
And so when this society has driven people to that economic reality, we can't blame them for not having, quote, leisure time to contribute to local businesses in their neighborhood and taking a walk to the corner. And if that store doesn't have the product they need, to shop around locally for that product. When Bezos offers this absolutely dystopic, I mean, for its ramifications, solution of, you're exhausted, you're going to have some screen time, you're posting, your social media pictures to remember what your kids look like while you're working the next day. And, oh my God, you need to get these things. And look, they can be delivered 2 days from now. You don't have to actually take 1 minute more out of your day to do that. So that's one reality. Another thing is, and I hadn't actually, this is not something I'm quite as personally familiar with, but many folks in the disabled community have also talked about how really having online delivery and online shopping is an absolute godsend, since we still don't have an accessible culture, where many shops are still really not set up for folks with sight impairment or mobility impairments or chronic pain issues. And so you know, we need to solve those things as well as decrying the Amazon Goliath that is sucking the life's blood out of its workers and out of our local economies.
Well, can I take the Marxist piece of this?
I would expect nothing else.
Well, I don't really object to the online distribution of goods. Actually, it's more efficient in terms of the environment. The problem that I have is that Bezos has become rich by working people to the bone and paying them very close to minimum wage. If instead Bezos were forced to pay three times as much for labor, if those workers got $35 an hour, if they were allowed to unionize, if they had vacation, if they're allowed to keep those jobs, to move up in the job, to have educational, in other words, to spend three times as much on labor, that would suck billions out of Jeff Bezos, hundreds of billions. He would still be a billionaire, but the workplace would be so well off that they would have houses in which their extended families could live. The homelessness problem would disappear in Seattle and around all of those. It would take a decade. But all of these societal problems, you know, not enough tax base to fix the sewers, that would go away. The society would be transformed. But we don't do that because we are trained to believe that people who are doing hard manual labor deserve to suffer. And so they do the work, which generates obviously the hundreds of billions. And the hundreds of billions, instead of going mostly to them, goes mostly to Jeff Bezos, who plays with his silly ass spacecraft.
Right, or the Walmartization, the same, and
exactly.
Not paying them decent, and at least, you know, at least Costco pays people a little bit better of a wage, but you're right, exactly. They'd still be uber rich, and the worker bees would at least have enough money to do some more things.
Now, rich is rich enough. I think we should limit wealth to, you know, 3 million or something like that. That's a hell of a lot of money. I mean, it's a great lifestyle. You don't need the other 100 billion.
Well, and I was just out here. The local hospital in the Dalles just opened up a brand new Gucci therapy place right on the waterfront in Hood River, and they're competing with the Sisters of Prophet over here, the Providence ladies in Hood River. And I was the only goober out there protesting that the CEO of this nonprofit hospital in the Dalles, the CEO makes $675,000 a year. And I spent one night in the hospital last December, and it cost me $12,000.
Right.
And I said, what's wrong with this problem? Everybody's inside of this ribbon-cutting ceremony, sucking down wine, and I'm the only goober out there protesting this damn thing.
Yeah, you can,
but anyway,
you can call it salaries, but it's still profit. And when you've got the board of directors sitting there, 12 people who make a maximum commitment of 32 hours a year, sucking in $200,000 and $250,000 each, that comes out of denial of health care.
Yep.
Hey, Squirrel,
anyway, well, thank you
so much for your call.
You bet.
503-231-8187. Go ahead, give us a call. Join in the conversation this morning. Now we are talking to Chris. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yeah, I was just calling in response to, yes, you know, what are you trying to do in regards to Trump and the situation we're in? And one thing that I've actually found, I wouldn't say really effective, but slightly effective, is admitting to my white friends, like, hey, I'm a white and I'm of privilege, and talking with other white people, like when I see some of the comments on Facebook, and actually having a real conversation, not on the Facebook page, but either on the phone or just messaging to talk about what privilege is, and admitting my own to kind of open that dialogue. And I've actually had some positive feedback. Just talking about, like, look, all I'm saying is, as a white male, we're the top of the food chain, and generally speaking, we're going to have it easier than someone else in the situation.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you didn't work hard. It doesn't mean you were not educated or you're not smart or that you didn't overcome adversity.
Right.
It's just that the system is designed and built to support us first, and we're trying to change that. And those changes sometimes feel like inequality. And when you see reverse sexism or reverse racism, that's what people of color and women are facing off with all the time. And even me speaking about it, I still can't comprehend what a day-to-day would look like. I can be educated, but I'll never know, will never know as white men, what those disadvantages are. But we need to be receptive to feedback, and the way we can be an ally is just starting by admitting our own privilege.
I think that that is actually a really important thing. You know, I think it's important that we do acknowledge the privileges we have, and we also not only acknowledge them, but we leverage them, you know, because, you know, white people talking to other white people about racism is super important, because racism is actually, you know, a white person's problem to solve. Kind of like rape culture. It's men that need to really solve rape culture and stop raping. It's, again, kind of analogous there. And I think that as a white man actually saying, yeah, look, the system is actually stacked in our favor, doesn't, again, doesn't mean every white man is doing well, you know, lives a life of privilege. Doesn't mean that, but that there are certain privileges and biases that, you know, that are stacked towards you. That is super important, to just hear that coming from somebody in that demographic, and to say, you know, you don't, this is the thing that I often hear, but I didn't ask for this. I didn't do anything to, it's true, you didn't. But that's the way society has been stacked, right? It is the way that this country was formed, with a white bias and with a male bias. And so to start with that and to say, yeah, this is where things are at. I see how the deck is stacked in my favor. Let me use those. Let me use that privilege to leverage change for everyone. I think can be super effective, and one of the most effective things to do. So I thank you for actually engaging in hard conversations with people.
And one example that I use all the time that has gotten me the most mileage is I say, look, I have to wear a suit and tie for work. And when I walk in, if I walk into Nordstrom's during the week after work, the way I am treated is entirely different than when I walk in if I'm wearing a, you know, a ball cap and my hoodie. Yeah. And I'm not faulting Nordstrom's, but what I use that example is to say, like, look, that's, if you can't see that, like, start there. Like, just start noticing the little ways that even the way you dress, you can be treated differently. I'm like, there's so many hidden things that you're just oblivious to as being a white dude, that you need to start opening your eyes and asking and listening, because it's there. It really is.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. Class bias exists for sure. And that's even amongst the white dude community. Like you said, you don't have to go too far to see what it takes to be treated in a different manner. And so thank you very much for that observation, and thanks for having those conversations. Super important.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. 503-231-8187, the number to call. We have, just about 15 minutes left or so, a little bit more. So jump on in. I also want to mention that, you know, with all of this stuff, I sometimes hear curious things about self-care, right? Self-care is actually not only a good idea, and not only is it not elitist, it's actually essential, because we're in this for the long haul. We live in a traumatizing world, and everyone in this country, everyone has been traumatized by it. We need to take care of ourselves so that we can stay active in the movement. This doesn't mean that, you need to disengage from the movement for a long period of time and, go develop a new spiritual practice and health regime. It doesn't necessarily mean any of that. What it means is notice when you are at your limit, when you no longer feel good about what you are doing in the struggle or the dance, depending on how you want to look at it, for social change, when you are finding fault with all of your comrades, right? When you are finding yourself angry and bitter, when you are finding yourself exhausted or sick, step back, assess, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? Make a new commitment and take care of yourself. You know, whether that's just taking a couple of days to go rejuvenate in some place that feels like it feeds your heart, your soul. I know I need time with trees every now and again. I really need to be surrounded by our forests And that helps me stay active for the long haul. This is not a situation we're going to turn around sometime this month or year. We are in this for the long haul. We know that. Marginalized communities have been in the struggle since we, since before we knew the struggle existed. And for folks that are just waking up to it, you know, it's here, it's around us. And now, thank you for engaging. You're going to be here for a while. Step back now and again and take care of yourself. Figure out what it is, you know, whether it's a day of doing stuff with your family, doing stuff with, for your house or your environment, whether it's hanging out in a park or playing frisbee, whether it's hanging out with your dog and giving your cat soulful, meaningful eye exchange, whatever it is, just make sure that you step back and that you do take care of yourself. When we don't, I think that that's when we start getting hypercritical of ourselves and each other. I think that's when we start actually engaging in more destructive practices. That's when we start feeling sick and tired. And that's when we tend to burn out and go, you know, this politics stuff, nothing really changes. Never mind. I'm just going to watch Netflix and, like, you know, eat donuts.
Well, that reminds me of something I've been seeing. Now, I don't want to tar everyone with the same brush. I want to talk about a tendency I see within this rubric, which is the idea that we're overreacting to Trump. We got Trump rabies. We've got Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah, okay. Shouldn't be reacting so much to that man and his tweets, that's for sure. I mean, there is obviously a deep underlying paradigm, a problem that needs to be addressed, and not just the demagogue. But the demagogue is in office. And if you're not a person who is likely to be shot to death for having a taillight out when you're pulled over, if you're not a person who might be mistaken for or have relatives who are deportable, if you're not someone who might need an abortion, if you're not someone who might be punched by a Nazi on the perception that you are queer, well, you can afford, in other words, getting back to the demographic that Trump is trying to rule from and is trying to benefit, if you're a white guy, a cis white guy, straight white guy, then you don't have to worry as much about Trump, it must seem, if you're not really awake, that it's hysteria. I mean, what the heck? Other presidents have been very bad, terrible policies have happening. But for most people in the nation, because most people are not cis, het guys, white guys, if you think about it, that's actually a minority. Most people are suffering an emergency under Trump because he gains his power through his demagoguery. He gains his power by spreading hatred. And I've noticed it, for example, as a transgender person. I remember maybe 15 years ago before transgender persons started popping up on the soap operas. That's what really changed things. And people decided that maybe they weren't quite so frightened by me. But 15 years ago, I often encountered people who were outraged. They would be angry. Sometimes they would be violent. But mostly the feeling of the people who objected to me would be that, you know, this is something new, strange, and they didn't know how to deal with it. And they really wanted me to change. There's a vibe there that I don't have a single word for. But now, well, for years, and especially under Obama, that changed, and people might have been uncomfortable with me if I was red, you know, if I didn't use my feminized voice in public. It changed under Trump. And the way it is now, probably about once a week, I go out, it catches me by surprise every time. Maybe it shouldn't. I go out to some public place, to a grocery store, or I'm waiting in line at a burger shop where it happened most recently, and usually it's a larger, and it's going to be a white guy, turns around kind of slowly and gives me that look, and it's not the same look as it used to be. It's not, I'm outraged by you. It's not, I wish you'd get out of my sight. It's more like, I really want to do you in right now. I mean, I've seen the most violent glares. And these are Trumpites. These are people who are being led by this demagoguery. And this is true for every demographic that is not white, straight, male.
Yep. Yepers. And thank you for adding that. That is, again, super important. It's not just 45, right? It's not just Trump. It is the fact that he has invigorated and called his base to action.
Yeah, he's weaponizing the hate.
He's weaponizing the hate. Thank you, Teresa. Thank you. That's exactly right. And he started doing this actually on the campaign trail, if you'll recall, when he would encourage his followers to punch protesters and said that he'd pay their legal fees. No problems. No problems. Get that guy out of here. No problems. Recall, this is who he is. This is what he is doing nationally now. And I think getting back to Chris's call to say, oh, you know, it's just another administration we'll live through, is actually a pretty, it's a statement that actually does underscore your privilege. And so check that. It also ignores the pre-fascist trial balloons that O'Toole talks about in the Irish Times that we have talked about on the show for the last year. That it is, you know, I was talking to a housemate last night and looking at the trajectory of Trump demonizing, vilifying, dehumanizing immigrants. And so this is where it starts. And so we see what's happening with asylum seekers and people seeking entry into the country and how they're treated and how they're talked about. We now see this with the green card holders. And as I was mentioning earlier during the show, we're seeing people who are naturalized citizens being threatened with being stripped of citizenship and deported. Trump actually mentioned that maybe people that take the knee or disrespect the flag or this country shouldn't be allowed to live here. He wasn't talking about naturalized citizens there. He was talking about black athletes, right? And so we see where this push is going, right? And we see, you know, it gets me to the point of don't make me quote Pastor Niemöller to y'all, right?
Oh, go ahead.
Nah, I'm not gonna. Y'all know the quote. And it's best not to wait until there's no one left to speak up for you. This is the time that we practice solidarity like our lives depend on it. Because, in fact, truly, they do. And with that, let's go ahead and talk to Daniel. Good morning, Daniel. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I wish you guys could go on for 2 or 3 hours, but I'm glad you brought up Bezos.
We can go on for days.
I know. It's awesome. I'm glad you brought up Bezos. Because I've been having this conversation a lot with friends, with everybody that I can. You know, I used to love Amazon. Amazon used to be great, right? I was a Prime member a few years ago. And, wow, this is really cool. Well, Bezos is out of control. Amazon is far too big. Bezos is far too rich. They're now using their market share to thwart any and all competitors. They're putting small people out of business. A friend of mine in San Francisco who's an esthetician, it was just talking to her 2 days ago and how she's just so angry at some of her clients who ask her advice on products to get, and she tells them, and they're like, oh, great, okay, yeah, I'll probably get some, and they'll go on Amazon and get it because they can get it that fast, and they can return it if they want to, and it is affecting her business, and she's certainly not the only one, but
right. The
point that I wanted to make was, there's so much wrong with capitalism. It's just a freaking disaster. But one of the biggest things that I see the problem is that it encourages greed. It encourages exploitation of our planet and our planet's resources and our people all for profit. This capitalist mantra, a maximum profits at any and all costs is a walking disaster in every way that you slice it. Bezos should be, he's a perfect example of we should limit wealth and we should limit the size of corporations. The other problem, and I think Amazon is a publicly traded company, is it? I'm sure it is, right?
I believe it is.
I believe it is. Well, whether it is or not, that's the other problem with capitalism, is that when you have a publicly traded company, you are constantly under pressure every single quarter, every single year, to make more and more and more and more profits for your shareholders. Nothing is ever enough. You have to make more and more. And eventually, you're going to have to lie, cheat, steal, exploit, and do anything, thwart workers, do everything you can to make more and more and more money. And that is just not sustainable.
Yeah, it's publicly traded. It's up 14.51 at 1827.48 if you want to trade some today.
Fabulous.
Thanks for the stock tip, Teresa.
I read something a few years ago that always sticked with me, and I'll leave it at this so you guys can have other callers. But I don't remember where I read this, but oh my God, it was a fascinating article that likened people like Bezos, capitalists like Bezos, greedy people like Bezos, likened them to drug addicts, and it makes perfect sense. Yeah. He doesn't know when to say no. He doesn't know when enough is enough. How rich do you want to be? How rich and how much power do you really need, Jeff Bezos? Now he's talking about having a pharmacy, through Amazon. Seriously, Bezos, what is seriously wrong with you that you can't say no, that you can't stop? This is the inherent problem. It encourages all of this behavior from him.
Right there with you, Daniel.
I think that could
be said for any of the multi-billionaires that, we see, be they Bezos or Musk or Gates that it is an addiction and it is unhealthy. Maybe, we could just see ourselves as merciful when we intervene to say, nah, enough is enough. We're separating you from some wealth now.
Well, and I think Bezos is a great example. Go ahead.
I've been getting through, and I've been having this conversation with my friends, who everybody shops on Amazon, right? But I'm having this conversation going, do you really need to extend your Prime membership? Do you really need to order every freaking thing? Because a lot of my friends don't have children. And don't have these time constraints.
Yeah.
And I've gotten through to a lot of them. They've sat back and they went, oh my God, no, I don't. And I'm like, you guys, you're putting local businesses out of business. Hey, I was guilty of this too.
Thank
it wasn't
you for
until
doing
about
that.
Six, seven, 8 months ago that I went, oh my God, I'm right. contributing to this guy's bottom line. I don't need to do this. And so I stopped my Prime membership. I only buy on Amazon when I absolutely can't find it anyplace else. And I am so enjoying going to my local businesses and supporting my local business. It brings me joy to do this instead of
absolutely.
Clicking my button.
Nice.
Well, tactically, I think that's a great thing to do. And tactically, in terms of publicity or making a gesture, I think a boycott's a great thing to do. Although it's clear that Amazon isn't going to be boycotted away. And so that's why I like to point out that, and Amazon and Bezos is a great example, because you can see it's very clear that that wealth is generated by extracting it from the underpaid labor. The labor is generating the wealth in a distribution business. That's what's happening. And then that wealth, instead of being distributed more rationally, even under a capitalist system, it's being distributed irrationally because it's creating this terrible poverty and degrading the quality, if you will, of the workforce, if I can take that mechanistic view. If that's the capitalism just out of control, and that the wealth that he has accumulated is exactly the reason and the symptom of the taking away that wealth from the people who generated it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much, Daniel.
Great. Thanks so much, guys.
We are just about out of show. I want to remind folks that you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station, here in Cascadia. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 o'clock, Veterans Voice Radio with Northwest Vets for Peace will be dealing with the after effects of war. At 10 o'clock, Valley Views looks at more ways to reduce and possibly eliminate energy bills. At 10:15, you'll hear Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, it's Law and Disorder with the author of The Fall of Wisconsin, The Conservative Conquest of a Progressive Bastion. All of these programs are made possible by member support. So please, if you are not a member now, please take care of that. And you can go to kboo.fm and click the donate button. if you are a member and you have a, you know, extra 10 bucks to spare, toss it our way. We are the People's Media. We are your community radio station. Please support us. And with that, we will make way for Veterans Voice. Thanks for joining us for Positively Revolting this morning. Thanks very much to Teresa for coming in and being my special guest.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tammy, for engineering.
Yay, Tammy.
Is proud to co-sponsor Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School in Portland. Pass the Mic aims to decrease isolation and find ways to connect youth, to carve out their own expressive safe space, and to share it in their own creative terms. This five-day music camp culminates in a closing concert by the Immigrant and Refugee Youth Campers, featuring their bands and performances created during the week. Again, that's Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School, 5405 Southeast Woodward Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. And coming up next is Veterans Voice. Marvin's here with a look back at the grim realities of World War I. Stay tuned for that.